get to get away because of my son, but we did this weekend. So Kevin talked to me Saturday morning. We were in Danville. We went up early and spent the night there, and so I was good either way, whether it went on or it didn't go on. But I'm glad we had the extra extended time with my wife and being here. Enjoyed it, and just want to bless your congregation here. So this afternoon, it's going to be in the same vein, but a little bit of a different twist to relating to our children and our families, and that is the children's relationship to the church and how that relationship works, the children relating to the church, the parents relating to the church, because it is definitely of interest to me. I was having a lot of good conversation over lunch about this. You know, we've all picked the church we go to. We raise our children in the church for a reason. We've picked that church, but we're not the only church. Some people do it differently, but we've chosen to do church a certain way. And our children grow up, and they're like, ask the question, well, why do we go to that church? Why do you do the things that you do? And are the things you do important? And how are we as parents supposed to lead our children? And what are we supposed to say to our children? Like, this is the only church, you better stay in this church, or church just like this? And how does that whole relationship work? I spent a lot of time analyzing it. Don't have a lot of answers, but I want to give some insight of how. I'd say the answer to the question is, the thesis is, but that sounds too much like a school teacher, but I want to get across is that we raise our children to want to go to church with us and want a fellowship where we're at, and that we're raising them to take our place because we feel like what we believe is important and we have something to give the overall kingdom, and God's given us this, and we want to see this continue on, this work continue on. Turn with me, if you would, again. I'd like to read from the Bible, but as I said at the beginning, I did not have a lot of Bible teaching this weekend, and I recognize that. At home, I generally preach expositions. I like to go through books of the Bible. That's what I do. I take some liberties as needed, but I was not doing that this weekend, and I somewhat apologize. But we were simply, I said, a fireside chat. We're talking about the family, and I kind of more took that approach. But in 1 Corinthians 12, talks about the body. And I want to read those verses in 12 to 31, after just a few comments. But the church is an organism, breathing, living, moving. And if you have not read Gary Miller's book, Church Matters, pick it up. I think he read Gary Miller in our circles, a prolific writer, does a lot of writing, speaks at Reach, all our things. Great writer, and he wrote a book about the church, I think recently. I just finished it up very recently. Great book, and I think all of us should read it. And he talks about that, you know, he talks about our bodies and what churches are, and you know what, our bodies, a lot of things moving, and they tend to bump into each other sometimes, those muscles and those bones, and cause friction, and many times our young people are the collateral damage when that happens. And I will say to you that I come from a setting that has had almost unparalleled stability. And we did have some struggles the last year. We absolutely did. It was the hardest year of my ministry ever, the last year. And if I would have preached this sermon and talked about this a year ago, I wouldn't have understood it, because our church had never experienced anything. I almost can say that. It was cruise control. And we had some struggles in our church in the last year, and that was probably good in some ways. Humbled us a little bit and made us really come together in some ways, and it's been good. And the scriptures here talk about, and I'm going to read here in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 12. For as the body is one, and hath many members, and all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so is Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Gentiles. Whether we be bond or free, we have been all made to drink of one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot says, because I'm not the hand, I'm not the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the ear says, because I'm not the eye, I'm not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? But God hath set the members, every one of them, in the body as it hath pleased him. And if they were all one member, where were the body? But now are they many members, yet but one body. And the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee. Nor again the head to the foot, I have no need of you. No, much more those members of the body which seem to be feeble are necessary. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon these we bestow more abundant honor. And our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. For our comely parts have no need. But God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked. That there be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffers, all the members suffer. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice. Now you're one body of Christ, and members in particular. And God hath set in the church apostles, prophets, teachers, miracles, gifts of healing, helps, governments, diversities of tongues, or all apostles, or all prophets, or all teachers, or all workers of miracles. Have all the gifts of healing, do all speak with tongues, do all interpret it. But covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet I show unto you a more excellent way. And this scripture is so telling that we are different and we need each other. But we're going to bump into each other at times. And that bumping into each other causes stress, causes some fractures, causes pain. And sometimes it's hard to see the gifts that are different and to see them complement each other. I can tell you our ministry team is very different. And most of the time we get along really well. A lot of you know these guys. You know, Pastor, or now Bishop Ted, nicest guy in the world. I mean, just nice. We haven't had a crossword together in 17 years in the ministry together. Probably not, but that's because Ted's too nice. Ted is just so nice. Ted's a nice guy, man of God. And then my Jason's the fireball, my brother. He is the fireball, and he's like my dad. And then I'm more the teacher, the organizer. And then Ben's like the perfectionist. And then we got Keith who came along, and Keith's the newbie. But, you know, we're just all really different. And it'd be easy to get annoyed with each other. That's easy because, you know, we just do things so different. And to really to work, to appreciate other gifts is a challenge at times. And I look at some of these verses, especially 18. God has set every member all as it has pleased him. And sometimes I think about that. Was that in the big church, the macro or micro, or is that in our little churches? And some of you from small churches are like, I don't think we've got every gift. I don't think we have everything covered here. I think we need a lot of help in some areas. And I think that too sometimes. And it feels sometimes like you read this and it seems really idealistic. I've just said everything exactly like I want it. I'm not here to explain that all and then why we have some of the struggles and some things happen. I'm not here to figure that out. But Paul ended this chapter, verse 31. All right, you know what? I'm going to show you a better gift, a more excellent way, and it's love. And love really is the thing that covers. And, you know, it's the cover that covers all this stuff. It's the thing that makes all this stuff work. And it can really be a challenge, though, but we need love. If I was a young father today and I was thinking of where do I want to raise my family? Where do I want to put my roots down? What would make sense to me? I often wonder what I would look at in a church. What would I look for in a church? What age bracket would I look at? Would I look at the youth? Would I look at the middle-aged couples? Would I look at the older couples? I'm not sure exactly what I would do. I never had much of a choice. I was carried to Fairview, and Lord willing, I'll be carried out. Not sure, but that's where I have been. But I say our goal is, you know, we're raising our families. My goal has always been to raise my family to be loyal to the church and to love the church they go to. Now, I don't know what decisions my children are going to make when they're adults. I don't know. But I'm trying to raise them to say, you know what, I love this church, and I try to instill in them a family, that it's a family, and we look at it that way. So some things that I think have been an asset. How am I going to keep my teenagers and my children engaged and appreciative and part of the church is kind of my goal for the next few minutes. Be involved. Be involved in your church. When I look at our church has been around for a while now. A lot of people, probably like you, thought my dad started it. But our church actually started in the early 30s, about 1932. They started the tent meetings and Sunday school. So it's been around a long time. So we have some multi-generational families. And when I look at those families that have been there for three, four generations, those families that were committed. And when the church doors were open, they came. And I will tell you that I grew up going to church all the time. Like my dad, we just went to church. Okay, we went to church. If he would still be the pastor, they would have church at Fairview this morning. I almost promise you. But they didn't. Those young bucks today, you know. But we went to church. And even if my dad had to plan the service on the way to church, he would do it. But we had church, obviously, every Sunday morning, every Sunday night. Every 52 a year, and every Wednesday night, 52 a year. So I grew up in church. We went to church a lot. And that has changed some. We don't have church quite as much as we did when I was growing up. But I always tell our men, and we still have church every Wednesday night. Sunday nights are very sporadic. I think it's similar to you. It's one or two church activities a Sunday night. Maybe it's a ministry. Maybe it's something. But about two church activities on a Sunday night. But Wednesday night, every Wednesday night. And I challenge the men, I think you can be there two of three. Now, I understand. You know what? You got jobs. We're really reasonable. But make it an effort to be there. And this is what I have always said. It's harder for me now, if I wasn't the pastor. But when you've got five screaming children, you don't want to go to church Wednesday nights. But you know what? You're 30. When you're 50, your body's going to say, I don't want to go to church tonight. So I say I think it would have been harder for me to go to church now than it was when I had little children. Because there you got the children, you're tired from that. And now, I mean, I'm just tired from a school day. I taught five periods. I get home, I'm just drained. The last thing I want to do most Wednesday nights is go to church because I'm tired. But I don't have a choice. I'm the pastor. But I go, and I always went. And so I say young families that if you can do that when you're young, say, I'm going to be committed. There's times you can't. Believe me, I understand. Sickness, you're just too tired. They're too grumpy and on. But that commitment, I see positives in those generational families, like in our church, that when the doors were open, they were drug there. And so I just encourage you to really be committed when the doors are open. I think that says so much. To parents and to teenagers, I encourage you to... I say about leaders, we are not perfect. Sometimes, and we make a lot of mistakes. And it's easy to sometimes get frustrated with leadership. But I say it's damaging when leaders are bad-mouthed and say, you know what, these leaders, you know what, and I know a lot of times you have good reason to, okay, let's be honest, but maybe keep it between husband and wife. That was just a lousy sermon. Did you hear the guy this morning? You know, that's true sometimes. But maybe just tell your wife and don't let the kids overhear it. Because I think that can do... that can do a lot of damage. And think of your church, as I said. I tell my family a lot, church is like a family. All of our families have different ways of doing things. And we all just have our lines different places. And our churches do that and our families do that. And that's right. That doesn't make it much better for you. Like certain lines I have... And they don't make any sense. Okay, I'm from the city. I grew up in the city. I grew up at the park. I grew up playing basketball. So, you know what? These hands, you learned this morning, don't fix anything. But these hands could ball. Okay, I could play basketball. You know, I'll take any of you young guys on to this day. I'm not saying I'm going to win, but I'll take you on. But, you know, I can play basketball. You know, that is what we do. I mean, I grew up doing that. I'm almost embarrassed, okay? I'm almost embarrassed to say that, you know, our school plays basketball, okay? We play basketball competitively. It's something that I think we do. I think we've done a pretty good job, but we've really tried to use it to build character in our boys. Doesn't always work, but it usually works, and we play competitively. And, you know, I'm somewhat embarrassed to say that the tournament we had last week and that my son was the MVP of 125 kids, okay? It's like, was your kid live in a gym? No, he actually doesn't. But he's very disciplined. He works hard. I have a lot of fun. It's a way I interact with him and spend a lot of time with him, and we have fun doing that together. And so his tendency would be, like me, to sports, like power and cars and all that stuff. We could so care less about hunting. If you want to torture me, make me hunt or fish. That's just pure torture. Cars, trucks, tractors, I can't stand any of it. But sports is my natural bent. So I have certain rules that don't make any sense that I instill in my, like, he can wear a Philly shirt, but I don't let him put a number on the back. Well, that's really dumb, Dad. Well, you know what? You can wear a Philly shirt, but don't put number 5 because, oh, Chase Utley? Well, you want to be Chase Utley? You know how he talks and all that? Or you want to be this guy? And all these kids today wearing LeBron, Steph Curry shirts and all that. I don't let my boys do it. I'm not saying I would. Absolutely not. But it's sort of a rule of my house. You can wear a Philly shirt, but I don't want you representing any player. They better be such a crystal clear Christian if you're going to put their jersey on. If not, no part of it. And that seems really dumb, doesn't it? But, I mean, that's just where I've decided to draw the line with them. I don't want you acting like any of those players, but, you know, we marvel what they can do on the court. But, you know, that's a family role. That's kind of what I've chosen to do with my boys. And, you know, our churches are somewhat like that. View them as a family. This is what we've chosen to do. This is what we've chosen to do. This ain't the right way. There's probably better ways. But as a family, this is what we've chosen to do. And to give honor and respect to the leaders and the church, man, that goes a long way with your children. Make sacrifices for your church. We all know how it is that you appreciate something you sacrifice for. Those of us in Christian education, Kevin, do you guys use the EITC program up here? Okay, it's kind of faith builders, how that works with the EITC, the state. Wonderful program. And really, all the children from the city are in our school through that. And that's the thing we struggle with sometimes, but now the parents aren't sacrificing anything. And because they all get free tuition, but so many of them are used to free everything, and they would never expect to pay for school. I mean, you wouldn't make a thing. That's just not in the world they live in. Everything is free. But when you don't know the sacrifice, sometimes you don't appreciate something. And I say, no sacrifice many times is no support. And in today's church world, like, it is hard to ask for sacrifice because our churches almost don't. And everything is easy come, easy go. But when you sacrifice, a commitment follows. And church, I told our church recently when I was preaching about, you know, church. Our church has got to make a decision. We're rather large right now. And what are we going to do? Plant some churches, do some churches. And I don't want everybody to be comfortable with me. If you come through those doors and you're comfortable with everything I say, I'm probably doing something wrong. You know, I want to challenge you a little bit. We want to challenge each other a little bit. But you want to have to sacrifice a little bit. If church for all of us is exactly like we want it, somebody's not doing something right. Because then it's too easy. Then it can almost be too much of a club. Like, yes, this is exactly what I want. I don't have to make any sacrifice. That's not really what we want. So be willing to sacrifice and have your children see, wow, mom and dad made some sacrifices for that church. Dad really wanted, I don't even have to talk hunting and trucks. I can only talk sports. I'm sorry. But you know what? Dad really wanted to see that Phillies game Sunday afternoon, but he wouldn't go because it was on Sunday. That was, oh, man, oh, I'm impressed with that. I don't know how to talk your language. Sorry, boys. But that sacrifice, that's going to mean something. And Dad did it because he wanted to. Not because he's like, oh, if the deacon finds that out or the bishop finds that out. But he's like, you know, Dad did that because he wanted to. Makes a lot of difference. Come to grips. And especially maybe I say this to the young people. That church in North America today is difficult. It's difficult. When we read the first century church and what they were, you know, that it wasn't like it is today. Maybe us Anabaptists, we created the free church. Maybe it was to our disadvantage, right? We made the free church, you pick, you choose. Maybe to our disadvantages, but it's difficult. Church in America really is difficult because we can hardly ask for sacrifice, because we can so much do whatever we want. And it can be very easy not to be really dedicated to our church, because I'll move, you know, I can move next week and I can land on my feet and be very happy somewhere else. So it's hard and we wonder why. Why should we be? And not to get into too much Anabaptist history, but you look in the 1960s when there was a big change. In the 1960s where there was a major change in 68 when the Lancaster Conference in Eastern, and one group said, man, we are just going to run by a constitution and nothing is going to change. And very little has changed. But the people just change and rotate and change and change and change. People just come and go, and people leave and come and go. And so that one group has ruled by a constitution that has almost largely stayed the same. And then the generation that is at me or a little older has so watched people just move like crazy. And people just metamorph, and what they were 50 years ago and what they are has really changed. And it's like, wow, the church is just going through a lot of change. And so I would say it is. The grass often looks greener. Many times we think, man, if I could just get there, I would be happy. We're all that way in everything. Man, if we could just get that one thing, man, I would be happy. And I challenge myself to be happy, try to be happy right where I'm at, and really be an asset right where I'm at. Talking to our teenagers. Our teenagers have a lot of questions. And I was talking with Glennie a little bit over lunch and just some fun stuff to talk about. And we talked about it last night and how so many teachings that we are given today that our fathers were not given, and how we've so learned engaging our boys. And I found it so interesting. You're in the middle of Valiant Man when we're at the same lesson you guys are right now. And we're engaging our young boys and going through that with them and all our different groups and young men's groups. And it's been such a blessing. And so many of the men going through that, this was so unheard of. This was unheard of in generations past. And engaging our teenagers and talking to them, we live in a me-centered society. And social media drives that. We know it's all about, you know, it's all about, not yous. I'm not blaming yous. Let's blame the millennials. I don't want to believe. I know we got millennials here. Can't do that. Sorry. But the attention is often on themselves, people, and what they're doing and the things they're doing. And we've got to engage our young people. But it doesn't help them. There's a difference between engaging to them and catering to you. And I say the more we teach and explain and why we're doing this, the less we have to cater. and we haven't done enough of teaching. And so then we have to cater. And the young generation, many times, we as leaders in that want to engage you. You see the world so differently than we did. But it's different. And we've got to embrace that and be willing. And I say to young people sometimes too, sometimes be careful. There's things you want to see. You're looking at my generation and the next generation up, and this must change. And I say to young people, sometimes just hold your horses a little bit, because in 20 years you might be like, I'm glad now I didn't change that. So the key is, we want to engage you young people. We really do. That's one of the reasons I'm going to go to SMBI for the next few weeks for Clayton, because I love having these discussions with young people, because we do care about you. We just don't want to do everything you guys want, okay? We don't like all your ideas, okay? That's well spoken. You're important. You really are. You see the world differently than we did. And some of the things that were so important to us, you're looking at like, why do you find that important? But we want to engage you. I want to remind, especially the young people, growing up in churches like ours, I just say that God placed you here. Ask yourself, sometimes you're like, why am I doing this? Why am I living the Anabaptist life? Why do I have to do all these things? Ask yourself the question sometimes, why did God place me here? I personally think God wanted you here. And I'm really big. I think it's the greatest thing in the world that I'm an Anabaptist. Okay, I love it. Because everything in this world is owning your difference and being different. Oh, I love the fact that I'm in the 3% of Christianity. Because I think maybe that's for the wrong reasons, because this world is so cool to be different, diverse and everything, and that's all cool and vogue and everything. So I just think it's so neat that I'm in the 3% of Christianity, that I view so many things differently. So embrace it. Embrace your difference, that your Christianity is different, and you have something to offer the world. There's a reason you were born here, and take that seriously. So, and I think so many of the principles we live by are right, and we're early church. Now, there's some things we haven't done as well as we should have, but we're not going to get into those, okay? We don't want to touch those right now, do we? But God needs you here. And what if He's counting on you to be that 3% of the next generation? Because we have something to offer. And I hear many people, many brothers and sisters outside our circles, but they say to us, don't lose what you have. Don't lose what you have. You have something to offer. And I truly believe that. Many of them wish they had what we have, and we're so quick to toss it off. So own your difference, and we've got to continue to teach it and do a better job of it. Better job of teaching it, because we haven't always done the best, but we want to continually to do better and teach you why we're doing the things that we are doing. Because I will tell you, it's not all cracked up. It's not all cracked. It looks so great. The grass is always greener. And, you know, we watch the media church, and I get enthralled in it myself. You know, I got these guys like Craig Rochelle and some of these leaders and speakers, and I'm like, man, those guys are really, really good. And then little me gets up on Sunday morning, you know, without any training and don't know anything, and on like Mike Bloomberg, I want to hide behind the mic, you know. Oh, no. But you know what? I didn't need that joke in there, did I? Poor Mike. Trump picked on him so much. But you know what? We feel so insignificant. We feel like we're a nobody, and they look so good out there. You know, perception is not always reality. And you know how it is, the closer you get to something, you realize it's what it really is, and you become less critical. I say that about church too. The closer you get to church, you become part of it, and we don't become critical. Like, I can solve everything in Washington overnight. Okay, I could solve it all overnight because I don't know even know what's going on. I have all the answers. But I'm not even a part of it. I don't even know what's going on. And that's the way it often is in life. And the grass always looks greener. And sometimes we look out and we think, man, everything's going really well there. But I want to tell you that the grass isn't always greener somewhere else. It's not always, I mean, I know there's a lot of excitement. There's money. There's media. It looks really good out there. And I know. But it's not always what it appears. I touched on a little earlier. Help your children see the church as a family. And try to avoid that us against them mentality. But we're family. And try to raise your children along those lines. A complaint we often hear, maybe in the church, in our homes, you know, nobody cares what I think. You often hear that, well, I can say what I think, but nobody's going to care anyway. Nobody's going to listen. And in the past, maybe young people have voiced that. Nobody's going to care what I think. Nobody listens to me anyway. And I would like to believe that's not entirely true. But people do care. And in your approach to church, I like to say, always approach church. What can I give? We often go to church with the consumer mentality. What can I consume there? And even if the preacher was bad, the song leader blew the wrong pitch, the superintendent had nothing to say, and the offering, nothing got put in the offering plate, and on and on and on. You know, you name it. Even if that's what happened, you can come and you can contribute. And I think too often, church hasn't worked because we went, you know, I'm not getting out of it, but go with what you can give. Even if you don't, it's that Wednesday night and you're tired and you've had a long week, maybe somebody needs you. Maybe somebody needs to hear a word of encouragement from you. So people do care what you think, and especially that person in the pew might need to hear from you. Go to give. Last one I have is look for ways to get our teens involved in our church work. And I know yous do that here. I know that, and I know we try and do that in involving our young people in our work, because that is such that that is a blessing. And I know my children are actively involved in our ministries there, and it's good for them. It certainly makes them feel a part of it. And I just think that is so good to, so if whatever you guys have going here, and parents, I encourage you to encourage your children to be involved. And when you get involved, my father always said this. Now, I'm not a farmer, so I shouldn't even say this because it could be wrong, because I don't know. But, you know, the donkey or whatever animal that's working, if it's working, it can't kick. As long as it's working, it can't kick. So that's one reason we went to church all the time. And my dad just had us running from one thing to the next. That was his way of keeping everybody out of trouble. My generation came along and said, wait, isn't there a better way? Can't we treat the problem rather than the symptom all the time? We just got everybody running. But that's what we want to do. So in closing, I just want to say that I thank God for church. I know that our churches are not perfect. And I know my church is not perfect. And my church has had some struggles. I know your church has had some struggles. And where there are people, there will be problems. But soldier on. Get involved. And it's a wonderful testimony when we can stick some things out through the thick, through the thin. Be there, be supportive, and God definitely uses church to teach us a lot of lessons. and we're passionate about it. That's why we fight about it. Because if you won things you're passionate about, you're willing to fight about. And we're passionate about church, and we care about it, and it's something to be cared about. And so I just challenge us that we leave a great example to our children that church is something to appreciate, it's something to rally around, and it's going to make us better. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this afternoon. We thank you for this time that I could spend here with the church at Bradford. Bless them. Bless them. And thank you for their work up here. And I know many of these pioneers came up here 10, 20, 20 some years ago and planted this church. And that was not what we often do as Anabaptists. And I want to just bless them for that. And thank you for them. Bless their congregation here. In Jesus' name, amen. Just real quick, I'm going to close. It's time to go home. But I don't like to ask questions because that makes it look like you have answers. Like, oh, we're going to ask the answer man. I know better than that. But if there was a curiosity question you had, maybe something about our church, something about how I raised my family in this city or was raised, I'll be willing to take a quick question. But I even hesitate to do it because I'm not the answer man. I'm not. But anyway, if somebody does have a question, I'll give it a stab. So no, don't feel obligated. I don't need to take any questions. But if there's one question somebody had that I'm just curious about that. So, all right, hey, it's been wonderful. I really enjoyed the weekend with you. I knew a lot of names, but I enjoyed spending the weekend with you, learning to know a bunch more.